This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanison and Noelle Lim. It's 6 o'clock in the morning, Friday the 26th of February. And not just is it the last working day of the week, it is the last working day of February.
Yeah, I know. It just goes by like that, isn't it?
It really does. And I think it's also Chap Gourmet today. So yes, to those of you who celebrate it, happy Chap Gourmet. I do hope you have a good evening ahead of you. But in the meantime, we do have a lovely morning set aside for you as well.
I'm very upset, Lynn. You didn't ask us how we were doing this morning. You always do.
Today it's a Friday. She just assumes you have a good
mood. She just made a statement that, oh my God, it's the end of the month. Fine.
Maybe I'm just can't wait to get away from you
guys. That's what it sounds like. You don't care about us.
Didn't you miss us yesterday?
Yeah, well, I did miss you terribly, Noelle.
So were you listening to us yesterday?
To save Lynn from answering that question, we do have a great show lined up for you, as we do every day. We're going to be taking a look, of course, at between 7 and 8, we're going to be taking a look at the 2021 investment landscape. We're going to be taking a look at this landscape in Myanmar, as well as the whether Parliament can reconvene. That's all during the 7 to 8. So more very, very exciting things. But closer to where we are now, in about 10, 15 minutes, I'm going to be talking about bookazines. First time I've ever heard this term. Is that the future of magazines? Well, we'll discuss and find out.
All right. And of course, later on at about 6:30, we are going to be taking a look around the world. Noelle, what are we going to be tackling?
Well, as usual, we will track some of the major markets like China and US. And also, we're still keeping an eye on Myanmar.
All right. And if you want to weigh in on our conversations, remember, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us over at BFM Radio. Up next, we are going to be asking you whether you think remote working is here to stay. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Happy Music by The Blackbirds, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noelle. So this article that we're looking at this morning is from Wired, and it's asking the question of, you know, if work is going remote, why is it that big tech is still building? So it looks at several examples, one of which is, you know, the famous big tech companies, Google, which said in October that it would be expanding its existing office leases in San Francisco by nearly a third, and would also continue some major developments in Mountain View and Sunnyvale. Facebook also, while they have been they've been implementing plans to let their workers work remotely from anywhere, also apparently unveiled fresh designs for a new campus in Menlo Park in May. It raises a curious question of, if we think that that work from home practices are here to stay, what happens? Does if you have a very snazzy, updated, modern office, does that change that at all for you?
Depends. Are you going bankrupt, or are you thriving in this environment? Because that's what it is, right? You name Facebook and Google, their profitability and earnings results over the last 1 year has boomed. All these tech companies, big tech companies are doing phenomenally, and they're hiring more people than ever before. I think in 2020, Facebook grew its headcount by 13,000 people. That brings its total headcount to 58,000. Alphabet added 16,000 people, taking headcount to 135,000 people. So even if you're at 50% capacity, if you do a remote working, a flexible hours situation, you still need office space. And also, as these companies grow, they need new campuses across the world, right? Because yes, you can do some amount of remote working, but I think the key term here is flexible working arrangements, so that you have, maybe you enter the office 3 times a week. So if you do enter the office 3 times a week, you still need the office buildings and campuses and things like that. Especially if you're a creative industry or innovative businesses, right? Because you need the labs. You need places for people to come together and brainstorm. Because, yeah, we can do it over Zoom and things like that, but there is a difference between doing it in person and doing it over the calls and stuff like that. So I think it really depends on the industry. Industries that are having to cost cut or are in a structural decline, those guys are going to have to watch out. And then maybe they'll use remote working to help balance the books a little bit.
So I think what this tells us also is that technology companies who are doing very well, even though the way they work, they probably can work almost from home, it tells us that they do believe that it's quite realistic and it's probably better to actually work in the office, right? Or to have this flexi arrangement. I think a few things, right? One is maybe not realistic from a morale point of view. You want to just sometimes get people together. And there's also something about, you know, the magic of having a physical space. You know, it brings people together. We are, after all, quite social animals. And then it's a, well, it depends whether it's an ego purchase. Sometimes, you know, it's just to create that landmark. I mean, just look at, think of Apple's building, that circular building.
Apple Park.
Yeah, sometimes it's just an ego thing to kind of stamp your mark. We are here, you know, and it's all about...
we have a spaceship.
Yeah, so yeah, it's great for branding, right? It becomes like a center of gravity, you know, it's like a landmark. And then lastly, maybe some council areas, some district areas, maybe giving them very good incentives to be there so that we can't discount that. So I think it could explain why big tech companies are exploring new real estate.
And don't forget, I think that one word you used there, Noel, was very important, gravity, right? So a lot of times, so everyone's always talking about the end of Silicon Valley, and they've been talking about it since the 50s. You know, we think of Silicon Valley as the new big tech companies, but no, Silicon Valley has been around for a long time. We're talking about Hewlett Packard when it was called Hewlett Packard, not HP, right? Bell. All these companies were built out of the Bay Area. And yes, some companies have moved out of Silicon Valley and gone to Texas, but companies like HP aren't big tech anymore. Big tech is Facebook, Google, Alphabet, sorry, same company, Microsoft, all these different companies. They're still there because there is a gravity well of talent and universities and infrastructure that provides what they need in that area. Stanford is there. There's a reason why industries grow around educational centers and because people go there and then you can tap up the talent before they even leave university. New York's got some really good universities and they focus maybe on the more financial sector. There are structural reasons why places grow. And that's, you can apply that to Texas as well. Texas has got some good technical universities. So you're going to see new industries crop up there maybe. But end of the day, there provides a gravity well. And you know, when the talent is there and the startups are growing there, you still want to maintain a presence there as well.
Yeah. And from a real estate point of view as well, you know, as this talent floods into the spaces surrounding these big tech offices, you do also see real estate start to develop. This article from The Wired talks to someone who is from, in her words, an undeveloped part of Silicon Valley, who I believe, you know, just before the pandemic started, saw plans for a Google office to come up.
She's a council person or something.
Yes.
Like that, right?
So near her area. And, you know, immediately she was like, oh, great. You know, that means that there's going to be more attention focused on this area. Perhaps there's going to be more, you know, there's going to be new buildings, new houses, more people, gentrification. These are some of the examples of the kind of the ripple effect that these big offices can have. So, but the question is, you know, COVID-19 has disrupted those gravity wells to some extent, but going forward, how long is that disruption going to last?
Has it though? Has it really disrupted the gravity well of Silicon Valley? Because people still live there. The businesses still thrive there.
Not Silicon Valley specifically, but it's the gravity wells of these big, you know, these big multinational company offices in general. Because in a lot of cases, you have the, you know, COVID-19 has introduced the concept of remote working on a long-term basis to a lot of these companies that were perhaps a little bit more entrenched in traditional working values.
So looking beyond tech.
Not just in Silicon Valley.
Yeah, so I think you might find that trend in startups. If they can work from home, so startups may want to, you know, kind of cut down on real estate costs. They may have this more remote working and allowing people to just work in different places. One comes to mind is actually Hong Kong and China. If your head office is in Hong Kong, but actually also your business in China, you might see more people moving to China.
Yeah, I think it depends on the job, right? Because I think the more innovative engineering kind of individuals probably want to be in the same room together working on ideas. But, you know, administrative or even like maybe the social media aspects of different businesses can be remote. It's basically going to be like a little bit of a hybrid system, right? Because flexible work is flexible work. It doesn't mean that the offices are going to disappear. So that'll be interesting. The gravity well has been disrupted, but I wonder if that just means that we'll just see big tech take up more space in the gravity well and create its own situation, right? Because while we have Facebook and Alphabet on the other side of the world, there are other tech companies growing here, such as Grab. And then there's also Alibaba in China. You've got all these different players there. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
Indeed. And do let us know what you think about this. Is remote working here to stay, especially if your office is particularly snazzy? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some messages coming up and then we're taking a look at the future of magazines. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Rock With You by Michael Jackson, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisen, and Noel Lim. So how many of you remember the feeling, the distant feeling of going to a newsstand and browsing, you know, as you like, flipping it through a magazine or two, and then perhaps, you know, paying for it and walking away? It seems like such a distant concept now because it's been such a long time since I've been to a newsstand. But it was something that I used to enjoy doing a lot. You know, when I used to buy the Empire Film magazine, I used to buy the Foreign Policy and the Foreign Affairs magazine, and occasionally Vogue or a cooking magazine or something. And these are the, unfortunately, also the same kind of titles that have seen a lot of pressure over the last few years, and even more so during the pandemic. But there's an interesting article in CNN Business looking at how these magazines are changing during this time particularly. And they're becoming something that is this article calls bookazines. We've also seen referred to as magbooks, not a particularly attractive name. But what it means is that these, you know, the periodicals that we used to see are becoming thicker, perhaps a little bit more, you know, hot off the press type stories. But it could be the future of magazines. Why? Because there's less in terms of production costs. There are also higher margins because they're thicker and therefore more expensive. So this article is saying it could be the future of the magazines that we know and love.
Yeah, I think, you know, back in the day, before the internet, magazines had ability to drive a crowd, because end of the day, you had you delivered content, right? Now, the minute the internet came in, timeliness, the minute you start competing with the internet on timely content, you lose. There's no way around it. So
I used to buy The Economist religiously, and then I got an online subscription and that died off.
Yeah.
But you still read The Economist.
I still read The Economist. Less now, though, admittedly, even though I do pay a subscription.
Correct. But you do it online, mm-hmm. right? So if you want to create a bookazine, you have to create something that's value added, right? It's not about I don't need to find out new things from you. I need you to help me inform me of interesting new things. You have to curate information in a way that I want to consume, and that I want to buy on a monthly basis, and that I won't throw out. Right? A magazine, why would I buy a magazine, read things that I could read online and then throw it out the next week? If I could buy a bookazine about personal finance that had things that were timeless, I would keep it on my bookshelf, like a book. You know? So it really is about delivering that, right? And when you do this, you start relying less on AdX, which Facebook and Google have have taken over. And with this, you start charging higher fees, maybe, but you create a fan base, a loyal fan mm-hmm. base that will continue to buy your product, even though it's a higher fee. And you go niche. I know there are bicycle bookazines and magazines that demand that have a high price point, but have a loyal fan base, because also people who buy these kind of bikes, we're talking about 10, 15, 20, 30, 40,000 ringgit bikes, a bit of a higher income bracket and affluent taste. So it really is about the niche that you're looking at, right? But I do want to say, I want to remark that one of my favorite so-called bookazines, the IKEA catalog, came to an end in December 2020. I think they announced that it was dying, that they were going to stop. And I was actually really upset about this, because that's one of my favorite things. I have IKEA catalogs over the last few years in my house, because it's nice to flip through. I would buy something like that and keep it around, you know?
So I have the Swedish version. Actually, I've gotten one for you too.
Yeah, you know, so the times are changing, and it really is about delivering value if you want to do something that's non-internet, it's about delivering the value as opposed to speed, because speed, the internet will always kill you.
Yeah, so this future of magazines is really about the future of media, right? So we are not just about giving information, we are actually curating an experience. So magazines, so now they have different platforms like The Economist. Now you can find them on podcasts. So it's a different way of engaging with the magazine. Now I get to listen to the people who actually put the articles together. Otherwise, if you read the magazine, they don't have bylines still, right? So so now I get to engage with the actual person who write the articles, although it's only a one-way conversation. So there's a different way of engaging. And also, well, magazines, they might move away from that monthly subscription and produce books instead. Actually, there are some magazines, right, that are, you could call them a book, like Monocle, for example. Yes. It takes 300 years to finish them.
Actually, Monocle is a great example.
Monocle
goes that extra step of even publishing actual massive hardcover books.
Yes,
right?
That's right.
The Monocle Guide to Better Living, for example,
yes.
Or the How to Build a Nation, both of which I have.
Yeah, so it's like every month is like a bookazine, right? And I remember we bought Chuang, the Morning Run team bought Chuang a 1-year subscription of Monocle. I think
wow.
He swear to God it was the best birthday gift he ever received. There are also other magazines like Porter or Porte by mm-hmm. Net-a-Porter. That's also quite nice. And I've seen this magazine, Be Your Brand. It put a spotlight on a brand. I think I have one copy of on Muji when they did a spotlight on Muji. So I do love this kind of bookazines, right? Mm-hmm. Although I don't really buy them these days. I either get them as gifts or I just browse through them in a newsstand.
I just haven't found something that I've connected with. And I think, it sounds super like atas sikit, but it really is about that, right? When it comes to things like this, it is about building a relationship and a loyal fan base. And I haven't found something that I particularly like.
Well, but, IKEA catalogs?
Yeah, but it's gone. I'm really sad about that. But you were talking about Monocle earlier, right? Lynn, you spoke to Tyler Brule.
Tyler Brule, yes.
Tyler Brule, who is the editor-in-chief and founder of Monocle. That was in May 2020. May 20th, 2020, a lot of 20s in there. That podcast is called Globalized Ideals Amid COVID-19. Definitely worth checking out, I think.
Yes, indeed. That was quite a fun conversation. But just, coming back to the subject of bookazines, do let us know if you think, what you think about this. Will it be the future for magazines? WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are about to head into the 6:13 news now, but first, some music. Perfect by the Smashing Pumpkins. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Friday I'm in Love by The Cure, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. 6:40 in the morning, 26th of February, a Friday, and we are turning our attention to what's happening around the world now. And between the US and China, things are still rather contentious. China's dismissed efforts to shift US supply chains towards alternative sources, and they've said it's unrealistic. This is just hours after US President Joe Biden signed an order to review how America buys strategic goods. And this review could lead to financial incentives, tariffs, or even changes in procurement policies, according to some officials that spoke to Bloomberg.
Right. So what happened is, I think one of the sources that they are looking at is actually to increase domestic sources, domestic production plants. So the expertise is really with the Chinese, right? Chinese, the Koreans, and more so actually the Taiwanese. And so so TSMC, for example, I think last year they already announced they will set up a $12 billion factory in the US. This shortages of semiconductor chips will just attract more players from Korea and Taiwan to just set up shop in the US as well. So it's not like the technology will be lost, right? You cannot build this technology overnight. So you still need to rely on the expertise that was developed in North Asia.
Yeah, I think the US gets quite a bit of its semiconductor supplies from countries which are its allies, like Taiwan and South Korea. But I think it'd be remiss to not take into consideration the amount of semiconductors that is produced in China itself. And this executive order that was signed by Biden. Now, it doesn't really target China, but it I think subtly aims to end the US's reliance on China and other potential adversaries, right? So the order doesn't directly call out China or any one country, but still, I think White House officials said an over-reliance on China and any other potential countries that there could be adversaries or so was a key risk, right? And I think that's just geopolitics 101. You don't want to rely on your enemy too much because then your ability to stand on moral high ground and call them out on certain things would be in jeopardy.
Well, they're not necessarily
enemies. Yeah, but you know, like things like...
Frenemies.
Frenemies, right? But I think about, was it during the Obama era? But, you know, because of the US's reliance on Saudi Arabia for oil, right? There were certain things that were maybe not so... The US wasn't so critical about with regards to Saudi Arabia, but the US has built up its ability to produce energy. It's done that over the last few years in order to become become energy independent. And I believe that they can do it. It's just about, you know, but there are always going to be structural differences because China is very top down and the US is not very top down, right? A call yesterday we had with a PE analyst, a private equity analyst, he really broke down and we're talking about infrastructure development in the US, talked about how fragmented it is, right? A lot of development comes from the state and local governments having to agree to it. Whereas I don't think that situation is is very similar in China.
Yeah, so this is something that we will be watching, particularly since China hawks are something that both Democrats and Republicans have in common over in the US. So we're still waiting to really get a full picture of how Joe Biden's foreign policy will develop. But right now, let's also turn our attention to Myanmar, where the ongoing protests against the military coup that happened at the start of the month turned violent when about 1,000 supporters of the military turned up at a rally in the city center. So tussles broke out between anti-coup protesters and military supporters, and there have been reports of particularly military supporters using knives and firearms, even catapults, to hurl rocks at other protesters. So it's certainly getting looking to get quite a, I don't know, I don't even know what the word is to describe the
heated
situation in
would
Myanmar.
Be a, yes. Would it be a soft word?
I feel like
word.
Heated is an understatement at this
yeah.
point.
Yes. I think what has it been at least 3 protesters and 1 police officer have mm-hmm. been killed in the violence at rallies against the coup.
So I think we spoke about foreign policy, or you mentioned about it. So I think this is really an early test for the US, for Joe Biden, on how he's going to manage this, right? And I don't think US can do this alone. He needs the allies in Asia to also rally together and to condemn Myanmar. But right now, I think neighbors in Asia are a bit reluctant to come out too strongly because I think there's always that, you know, no interference kind of understanding. And really, what's interesting to me is China's role, right? What is China doing? They have not really spoken up, but we know China wants stability, but it's not condemning this protest, nor is it condemning the military action either.
Yeah, aside Biden, I'll be curious to see what Secretary of State Anthony Blinken does, and particularly what kind of relationships he builds in Southeast Asia, because it looks like they do want to pay more attention to the region. How? Well, we'll find out.
And we're going to be taking a close look at how all of this is affecting Myanmar's economy later on at about 7:30 with Linda Liu of Maybank Kim Eng. So be sure to stay tuned for that. But right now, some messages. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was You Are the Best Thing by Ray LaMontagne. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. 6:51 in the morning, Friday the 26th of February. And we are now taking a look at the front pages of our newspapers and portals. And The Star has, of course, medical frontliners in Selangor and Putrajaya, who are the first to be vaccinated in the country. This is on the vaccine rollout in the Klang Valley. So 42 people, mostly medical frontliners, were among the first batch to be vaccinated in Selangor. So it has begun, guys.
Right, yeah. So the vaccine has landed in Shah Alam. The Selangor Menteri Besar has taken his jab. Kota Bharu as well received a batch of vaccines. Kota Kinabalu, Kedah as well, and Terengganu. But here, the NSD is interviewing some experts and they say the real test, I think the test, a measure of success, will come in phase 2 and 3, because in phase 1 is the frontline. seniors and the high risk groups, right? The elderly, for example. But phase two and phase three, how are you going to decide who gets what first, right? Are you going to go according to the red zones? I think that was one indication that Kyrie had given us. But beyond the red zone, what other criteria would you use in order to decide who gets first? Is it going to be like, for example, alphabetical order? So, and another news on vaccination. So the police are going to act against fake vaccination news, and they want to take stern action. And I think that is really wise, because, you know, you don't want to discourage people from taking the vaccines.
Yeah, I've got the Malaysian Reserve, and they've gone with, I think we've been seeing a lot of earnings recently, and they've gone with Maybank's earnings on their front page. And I guess fair enough, because Maybank, I think, it is still the biggest company in Malaysia by market capital, market valuation. I know earlier last year there was a concern that Top Glove would eclipse it, but I think that has since, died down. So Maybank saw its net profit for the financial year 2020 fall about 21% to 6.5 billion ringgit. I think not thoroughly unexpected, and this was backed was on the back of higher net impairment losses. But that said, though, they declared a dividend of 38.5 cents, and taking the full year payout to 52 cents, and did some back of based on 8 ringgit a share. I think that's like a 6% dividend yield, but that's of course at current prices. The bank did see revenue fall 3.5% to 51 billion ringgit. So again, not unexpected, and I think looking forward, they're a bit more optimistic. And of course, we will be covering, there are a lot of earnings to cover. There's MSM, there's Sime Darby Prop, and all of that. So we'll be covering as many as we can at the 9 o'clock hour, of course.
And just very quickly back on the vaccine note, the Malaysian Medical Association has called for all general practitioners to also be included in the early kind of vaccine rollout stages, because apparently, according to them, for now, less than half of the 7,000 GPs nationwide have been invited to register for the first priority group. And I do feel for them because I had to go in to a clinic recently, and I was speaking to my GP from literally the other room, because my GP has a two consultation rooms with a door in between. So he was at one end of the room, at one end of his room. I was clearly at the other end of the other room.
So you're yelling at him.
So yeah, basically. And it's a,
might as well speak to him on the phone.
I know. So, but it's the kind of, these are the kind of precautions that they have to take, right? Mm-hmm. Because people, a lot of the times when you start feeling some symptoms, a lot of the times you will go into your GP first, before thinking of going into a larger hospital. So they are still definitely at an at-risk group.
So how do they take your temperature and take your heartbeat?
Well, the temperature is taken for them, because they have the scanning things at the thing now.
Okay.
But they do have to come in and take your blood pressure. Kind of, I face the other way.
Okay.
It's a bit of an awkward situation, really.
Yeah,
in general,
it definitely makes sense to get the GPs vaccinated quickly. Well, in terms of the economy, so the government is expecting a 20% increase in job placements this year to reduce unemployment, according to the HR Ministry. And so apparently 161,000 people had secured jobs through the SOXO My Future Jobs website last year. So I guess that's quite promising. And with more vaccination rollout, and hopefully more businesses can open and we can go back to normal life soon.
Yes, so one hopes, especially as we slowly see COVID-19 cases coming down. One hopes that this trend will continue, and that the vaccine rollouts will accelerate that. Just a note as well, in the Star on page 2, they've got an article here that Perikatan Nasional has held its election bureau meeting. So this was between all of the parties now in Perikatan Nasional, PAS, Bersatu, STAR, SAPP, as well as Gerakan. They have made the decision that election structure is going to immediately be formed in order to prepare, I guess, for any upcoming general election.
Yeah, and I think that will be interesting to watch, right? Because I think we've seen a lot of There are reports, a little bit of noise here and there about how aligned they are towards their goals. And in fact, I think in about an hour, we'll be taking a look at the political scene with Dr. Hamidi, and especially on the back of the fact that there's been a bit of news around whether Parliament should be reconvened during this time. I think the Agung put out a statement earlier this week, a letter earlier this week.
Yes, indeed. So this is something that we will be taking a look at later on at about 7:45. So be sure to stay tuned for that. But right now we're heading into the 7 o'clock news bulletin. And to take you there is The Pretenders with Kid, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.